Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. No, we're not streaming tonight. Video. Of course, we're streaming audio. Welcome to tonight's program. It is Tuesday. There is primary. There are primaries going on in four states. We will try to get some results to you before the program's over tonight. As a matter of fact, I think some results are already in. Rubio has won the Republican primary in Florida. Kendrick Meek has won the Democratic Party primary, and apparently Charlie Crist has ran as an independent. Of course, he didn't have any competition I'm aware of. The race in Alaska between U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski and a crazy person named Joe Miller. Miller is absolutely wacko. I mean, just completely crazy, but that does not set him apart from most Republicans this election cycle. My God, has this party gone in the crapper, huh? Hasn't it? It's all right with me. I love to see it happen. Go, Republicans. Speaking of Republicans in the crapper, John Boehner talking about what he'll do when he's the speaker. somebody better tell Boehner that he has to run for that office amongst his colleagues in the U.S. House. Of course, Boehner should live so long. As much as the Democrats really irritate the hell out of me, the Republicans are not going to regain the House, when is it? Oh, in November. Yeah. Is it November? Yeah, there's election in November. What the hell's wrong with you? They're not going to gain it this year. They're not going to gain it in 2012. Forget it, boys. Sit down. Shut up. Stick a banana back in your mouth and just be quiet. There's no point. Anyway, he was out there today talking about what he'll do when he's the speaker. Every time I see that, I laugh. I'm sorry. He goes after Obama's policies. Well, hell, anyone can go after Obama's policies. But here's kind of the irony. Usually when you go after Obama's policies, you are either a loudmouth radio talk show host. Oh my goodness. I guess that would be me. Or you are a Beltway pundit, or I don't know, maybe just somebody that writes a blog. But if you're a Republican office holder in the House and you go after Obama's policies, especially the big tax increase coming in January of 2011 because the Republicans voted it in 10 years ago. When you are a Republican office holder and you go after Obama's policies, once again, stick a banana in your mouth, sit down and shut up, monkey. You've got nothing to say. But they keep saying it anyway. What the hell would Boehner do if he were the Speaker of the House? Look, the Republicans blew a $1 trillion-plus budget surplus spread over a decade. They took us into two unfounded wars. They want to eliminate all social safety net benefits, including unemployment compensation. Well, of course. Why not? You know, that's a business expense, right? Why do we want insane people like these in positions of leadership, any kind of leadership, even down on a county level, even below that? What's below a county? A township. What's below a township? PTA. What's below the PTA? Why do we want insane people in positions of leadership? Let's stay with the cautious cowards, the Democrats. A cautious coward who, whenever a cautious coward sees a Republican, the cautious coward immediately runs to the cloakroom and pees himself rather than stand up and punch the lights out of these Republicans. But I'll stay with the with the cautious cowards, I really will. By the way, is there anybody in America left other than aging white Christians that the Republicans don't hate? I mean, they don't like Jews. The only reason they hang out with Jews is because they want to cut their throats when Jesus slides down the pile of corpses and, you know, comes back and rescues them. They don't like Muslims because all Muslims are terrorists. They don't like gay people. No point trying to explain that one. They hate women, absolutely hate women, except the ones they can buy and pay for. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Who else? They don't like black... They don't like black folk. Oh my God. They don't like immigrants, legal or undocumented. They don't like union members. They don't like workers. Who do these sorry, sick bastards like? Who does the Republican Party like? Anybody got any ideas? Huh? Other than, of course, aging, smelly white people who, you know, and the ultra rich. We can't forget the ultra rich. What a mess, these Republicans. What a mess. Somebody needs to just put them out of their misery. I've never seen such a collection of freaks and fools. Speaking of Christian Republicans, did you hear this one? Oh, my God. This is in U.S. News and World Report, if you're keeping track. A group that proudly calls itself Right-Wing Extreme. That's the name of the group. Hi, I'm a right-wing extreme. This group has pledged to protect the church in Gainesville, Florida, that is planning to hold a Quran burning on September 11th. There's a press release. This press release, entitled Armed Christian Conservative Group to Protect Church Burning, or to protect the church during burning of Quran, was shared to us by Prince Shannon Carson of Right Wing Extreme. The Christian conservative organization Right Wing Extreme has offered its support and protection for the International Burn a Quran Day. Right Wing Extreme was founded in April of 2009 after the Department of Homeland Security report titled Right Wing Extremism. Oh, my God. There is a disease that has spread, is spreading across this country that is going to kill everybody. And I'm not talking about bad eggs or Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is a disease. But there is a worse disease than Glenn Beck, if you can imagine that. Glenn Beck is just a self-promoter who, I don't know, I think he sees himself as Napoleon or something. I don't know what the hell he sees himself, but he's just a self-promoter. But the disease that's spreading across this country is virulent. It's awful, and you can catch it. You got to be careful. Unlike the infamous cross burnings of the KKK, which were often staged on the property of opponents to intimidate them, the Quran burning will be held on the premises of Dove Ministries International. Why not Vulture Ministries International? With their enthusiastic consent. The ministry is saying, welcome, everybody, come, let's burn Qurans. Those are witch books. The only laws that could be used against such an event would probably deal with air pollution rather than objectionable political expression. Oh, my God. The person writing that is one Rudy Stettner, writing it for U.S. News and World Report. But he displays his complete ignorance. He says there are people who get their jollies desecrating the symbol of someone else's faith, such as Andre Serrano in his infamous Piss Christ exhibit, in which he suspended a crucifix in a jar of urine. Most Americans, from devout Christians to avowed atheists and members of non-Christian faiths, were disgusted by Serrano's gratuitous slap at Christian believers. How far off the mark is this poor miserable schlump who's writing for U.S. News? Serrano was trying to make the point that Christians had defiled and literally urinated on the symbol of their religion, the cross. Serrano wasn't trying to denigrate Jesus or the Christian faith as Serrano thinks of it. I guess with a name like that, he must be Catholic. I'm sorry, but there you go. The whole purpose of immersing a cross in a bottle of urine was to make the point of how Christians had destroyed. It's like Gandhi said, "I like your Christ, but I'm not sure about your Christians."
Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Armed group to guard church during Quran burning. Welcome to America 2010. You know it has triggered this madness, don't you? The election of Barack Obama. Emerging rights of people to get married, no matter what their sexual orientation might be. The still allowable law of a woman's right to privacy. How long has it been? Oh, no prayer in the schools. How long has it been that the Republicans seeking elective office have been jerking their brain-dead followers around? Oh, this year we're going to take care of it. This year we're going to get a defensive marriage law passed. This year we're going to get the queers out of the military. We're going to get... Well, they finally had enough. And with the election, the right-wingers did. With the election of Barack Obama, that tore it, man. Oh, my God. Do you see what I see, Harriet? A black man in the White House. The country's going to hell.
Yes, dear, but Jesus may be coming back. This might be a sign of the apocalypse.
Bob Alexander sent me an email today. No, it's not a moment with Bob. He's just pissed. He's just pissed off. He writes, "Things are getting strange-er. Over the last week or so, some people I know, not friends, just people I know, have felt it is now somehow okay to use the N-word again. Again, meaning like how they were able to use it in the 50s and early 60s. Maybe because Dr. Laura went nuts and blabbled it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again on her soon-to-be-extinguished radio program, dim bulbs across the land felt they had permission to slip back to a comfortable time when tossing around racial epithets was the right of stupid white people. One clever fellow I know spoke of Obama as a renig-er in the White House." Sure enough, you can go to the dictionary. Go to dictionary.com and look it up. Renigger, one who goes back on one's word. See how smart he was? See how goddamn clever? He got to say the N-word as well as make brilliant commentary on Obama's broken promises. It's always awful hearing an ill-educated, unmannered oaf talk as if the horses and dogs are still at the ready. The hoses and dogs are still at the ready. The racism that is always just barely under the surface has blatantly reared its ugly head in everyday conversation. I was with a couple of white guys when one of them must have thought it was perfectly okay to salt and pepper his conversation with N-word this and N-word that, because what the hell, it's just us white guys, right? A black man who's elected president lives in the White House, and that's driven crazy white people over the cliff. My family was steeped in racism. My parents, aunts, and uncles all used the N-word. The neighbors didn't have a problem using it either. And then Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. came along. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 passed. And slowly, almost everyone I knew made a point of saying Negro, except a few diehards who made a point of using the N-word when they were sure they were out of earshot of anyone who might disapprove of such language, especially Well, Negroes. Now we've time traveled back 50 years and people are tentatively trying out the N-word again. Crazy white people are flexing their unused racist muscles for the first time in years in public. We've already got crazy, stupid people hauling their assault rifles to events where they can brandish them while Obama speaks. The time seems right. Dr. Laura told Larry King, I made the decision not to do radio anymore. The reason is I want to regain my First Amendment rights. Who knew institutionalized racism was protected under the Constitution? Jesus Christ. The Kleagles at Fox News have spread gasoline over the entire country and are busily handing out strike anywhere matches to anyone who's stupid enough to listen to them. It's just a matter of time before some crazy stupid person does something that will inspire other crazy stupid people to light their matches. These days I try very hard to come up with something, anything positive to say about this great country of ours. But I just can't come up with anything better than, oh, we're just a bunch of stupid monkeys with guns. And by the way, no offense to the 264 known extant monkey species. I'm only referring to the Homo sapiens living in the United States who are hell-bent on refuting evolution by devolving into Homo insanum. Bob. I think he is pissed. I think he is. I was out in Seattle not that long ago, and I saw Bob. Went to dinner with him. We had some Chinese food. I noticed he was being very quiet. Couldn't figure out why until I finally realized that Bob is kind of had enough. So he ate his Chinese food, and I chatted with his wife and son and the other people at the table and waited to see what Bob would do. He really didn't do anything. Child is black, child.
Nice guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. By the way, we just may break down and take some phone calls from you next hour. We'll see if you're good. Now, this is one of those emails that's very appreciative. Her name is Vita. Very appreciative person who wrote. I think it's a woman. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's a woman who wrote the Vita. That's a woman's name, yeah. It's a very sincere email. Has to do with what we were talking about the chicken production facilities that have produced the killer eggs because of the conditions inside these chicken production facilities. Trust me, there's a lot of chicken houses, so to speak, here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. If you have been in one of those places, you will never go in one again. Anyway, here's what Vita writes. Dear Mike, thank you so much for speaking so much last night about the birds who are so unbelievably abused for egg predators. I just turned 64 and have been vegan since January 1989. Unfortunately, it takes this kind of event, people getting sick, to open a crack in the wall of the monstrous horrors animals endure. It gives animal activists a bit more credibility that we are not exaggerating. So thanks for educating people. Do you know what an egg is? It's a period. So there's eating a female's period, and there's eating rat feces, and there's eating decayed body parts, and there's eating antibiotics, and there's eating salmonella, or, ta-da, there's not eating eggs. The suffering of these birds is unimaginable. Setting aside for a moment the physical horrors these animals endure, the deprivation from anything that is natural or nurturing for them, the dark stench they breathe, the inability to care for their chicks. Which four or five people would you like to be stuck in an elevator with for a year and a half? What state of mind do you think would result? It's that state of mind that people eat when they eat these eggs, as well as eating the period, the feces, the dead flesh, the antibiotics, and the salmonella. I wonder how much of the nastiness we see around us is from people eating that rage and that despair for decades. Your most ardent vegan fan, or is it your most vegan ardent fan? You choose. Vita. Well, thank you, Vita. I appreciate the email. I'm not mocking her at all. It's horrible places. Horrible. How did it come to this? Speaking of things gross, you want some more? Keep in mind, as I share this with you, the seafood coming out of the recently murdered Gulf of Mexico, the zombie seafood that's coming out now, the zombie shrimp and the zombie crabs and the zombie oysters and the zombie whatever, is safe for you. You can eat it. However, there's this, and it comes from the French news agency from yesterday. I didn't see this on the news. Thousands of fish have turned up dead at the mouth of the Mississippi River, prompting authorities to check whether oil was the cause of mass death, local media reports said Monday. Local media reports, right. The fish were found Sunday floating on the surface of the water and collected in booms that had been deployed to contain oil that leaked from the BP mess in the Gulf of Mexico. The Times-Picayune reported, that's New Orleans paper. St. Bernard Parish President Craig Tafaro was quoted as saying in a statement, quote, by our estimates, there were thousands, and I'm talking 5 to 15,000 dead fish. He said, end quote, he said crabs, stingrays, eel, drum, speckled trout, and redfish were among the species that turned up dead. Tafaro said there was some recoverable oil in the area, and officials from the state's Wildlife and Fisheries Division were sampling the water. But he added, the president of St. Bernard Parish, he added, quote, we don't want to jump to any conclusions because we've had some oxygen issues by the Bayou La Loutre Dam from time to time. Some oxygen issues. Jesus Christ. Oh, oxygen issues. Thousands of dead fish. Now, we know. Okay, we know. Of course we know that the Delta, the Mississippi Delta, is where bad people go after they die. In other words, it's hell. A huge dead zone. I think the dead zone that exists before BP's Gusher, the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico is one of, I think, the second largest on Earth. I think the other one is off the coast of Nigeria. Is that where it is? Massive dead, or is it China? Everybody's competing to have the biggest dead zone off their coast. Have you noticed that? Let me see what else we have here. Oh, yeah, it was in the paper this morning. The U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia has granted a preliminary injunction today that temporarily halts federal funding of human embryonic stem cell research. Well, that's the end of that. Oh, my God, they're out there chopping up babies, trying to find cures for diseases. God heals, not chopped up babies. Judge Royce Lamberth, a Reagan appointee, justified the injunction on the grounds of the reactionary Dickey Wicker Amendment. That's what it's called, the Dickey Wicker Amendment to the Balanced Budget Down Payment Act of 1996, signed into law by President Bill Clinton. The amendment, sponsored by religious fundamentalists in Congress, prohibits the creation of a human embryo for research purposes and prohibits research in which embryos are destroyed or knowingly subjected to risk of injury or death. Excuse me. Well-funded Christian groups have lobbied and litigated extensively against stem cell research, using it as a rallying point for religious fundamentalism that coincides with religious campaigns against abortion and physician-assisted suicide. According to Christian fundamentalists, a human embryo is a human being possessed of a soul with plans, dreams, wants to get married someday, except the little gay embryos. They just want to have fun. And the destruction of an embryo is murder, most foul. Now, the stem cell research industry is freaking out, as well you can imagine. They're not sure what to do. Research on killer diseases. You know, I kind of go with the idea, if you don't want to have an abortion, don't. You know what I'm saying? If you don't want to take advantage of hospice care and advice from physicians or counselors on how to avoid horrific pain and destruction of your very consciousness at the end of your life, don't. Go through the pain. It's cleansing, right? Me, once I'm given a death sentence by a physician, I will say, yes, I'll take hospice starting two damn day. Let's go. Where's the morphine? I can say that because I've known people who have gone that route. I'm not being cavalier or facetious. I mean it. As a matter of fact, when Kathy and I went to our attorney and filled out our end-of-life papers, that was one of the things that we both requested. So, but anybody knows that, or everybody should know at this point, that little clumps of cells, they have souls. They have hopes and plans and dreams. I hope I'm not always a clump of cells. Oh, no. Here comes somebody with a scalpel. Ah! Oh, there goes my arm. I guess I'll have to grow another one. Eek. Oh, no. I wonder if I'll be the embryo that they find a cure for cancer. Who the hell with that? I want to grow up and get married. I want to have other embryos. Don't hurt me. Get away. Get away. Help. Help.
You sound like Mr. Bill.
I don't care if you have a grant. I don't care if you're a PhD or an MD or a... I'm just a little helpless embryo. Help, help. Where's Franklin Graham? Franklin! Help! I'm in this huge vat of nitrogen. I can't move! Help me! Eek! I want to grow up so I can go to the Quran burning down in Florida. I know they'll have another one when I'm grown up, unless you son of a bitch, you kill me. Don't kill me! I'm an embryo. Look at me. Look closer. How did that feel? I forgot to tell you, I'm an embryo for a vampire.
We'll be right back.
There is just one moon and one golden sun, and a smile means friendship to everyone. Though the mountains divide and the oceans are wide, it's a small world after all. It's a small world after all. It's a small world after all.
It's a
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malone.
This is really not Progressive Talk. I realize that's what the promo says, but I am not a progressive. I am a communist rat bastard who wants to devour you. What did Alan Simpson say? Oh my God, can I say that word on the air? I'm going to quote him in a minute here, Alan Simpson. By the way, during the third hour of the program tonight, I got a couple of emails from Cap Mary in Memphis that I don't think I can get them out during the second hour, but I'll share them with you during the third hour. She has written a letter to Kellogg's, the cereal people. Ow! Wait, do you hear it? And it's kind of along the lines, eggs are bad? Eggs are bad? What about? And then she, well, you'll hear it a little bit later. Okay. What else we got a little bit later tonight? I think we're also going to, I read some letters to the editor in the New York Times this morning. And one of them is from Bernie Goldberg. I'm going to share some of those letters with you. What else? Now, this is, I'm hoping. Oh, yeah, Joe Scarborough. Oh, my God. The former representative from the Florida Panhandle, the right-wing Republican knee-jerk, went to D.C. in 94 in the Gingrich Revolution and yada, 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 yada. He said some things on MSNBC. Was it this morning? I think it was this morning. So we're going to bring that up third hour, too. I'm letting a lot of this stuff go to the third hour because some of it is really, 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 you know, there's some bad words. Oh. What else we got for this hour? Stay here, Mike. I know there's a lot of stuff here. Ah! Prairie 2! Well, we don't have time for Prairie 2. We'll do it when we come back. Because Prairie 2 has, he's done a piece on Arbeit macht frei. Frei? Where's Kate Petrini, who speaks fluent German? Is it Arbeit macht frei? I think that's what it is. You know, what was over the entranceway to Auschwitz, the death camp? Work will set you free. Do 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 do. Oh yeah, Maureen Dowd on Sunday. She had a very interesting column entitled "Going Mad in Herds," like herds of cows. Among other things, she said the country is having some weird mass nervous breakdown, and the right is spreading fear and disinformation that is amplified by the poisonous echo chamber that is the modern media environment. Ooh, you go, Maureen. The dispute over the Islamic Center has tripped some deep national lunacy. Further into her piece, she writes, many people still have a confused view of Muslims, and the president seems unable to help navigate the country through its Islamophobia. It is a prejudice stoked by Rush Limbaugh, who mocks Imam Obama as America's first Muslim president, and by the evangelist Franklin Graham, who bizarrely told CNN's John King, I think the president's problem is that he was born a Muslim. His father was a Muslim. The seed of Islam is passed through the father, like the seed of Judaism is passed through the mother. Then Graham added, the teaching of Islam is to hate the Jew, to hate the Christian, to kill them. Their goal is world domination. Of course, the percentage of Americans who now believe that our Christian president is a Muslim has risen to 18%. It was 12% when he ran for president, 11% after his inauguration. Now it's up to 18%. We live in an asylum. You know we do. The Scottish historian Charles Mackay observed, men, it has been well said, think in herds. It will be seen that they go mad in herds. While they only recover their senses slowly, one by one. So, Maureen Dowd kind of plays on the words that Obama used during his campaign. She ends the column on Sunday by saying, if we are not the ones we've been waiting for, who are we? Who are we? The who asked that question a generation ago. Oh, Maureen, that's all right. Maureen Dowd hates everybody, so, you know, I think that's why I like reading her. She just hates everybody. All right. The Gulf fishermen are being held responsible for toxic seafood? Oh, yeah, that's right. The federal government admits not testing for arsenic, mercury, and other toxic heavy metals in seafood now. The U.S. government, even President Bujica himself, have said that Gulf seafood is safe to eat in the wake of the massive BP oil spill. But an admission from the federal government that it hasn't been testing Gulf seafood for toxic heavy metals, and news that fishermen are being forced to sign waivers making them liable for toxins in their catch, suggests that not everyone is convinced of the safety of Gulf seafood. Well, I'll be damned. That's right. It's that fisherman. He's the one. The fisherman. Why doesn't he have a degree in organic chemistry? Or is it inorganic? Hell, I don't know. So he can test his little oysters and bivalves and stuff that he pulls up out of the Golfo de Mexico. We'll be back. Stay with us, Mike Malone. Sandberg, Prairie 2. Quick email here from Roz in Canada. Mike, how is the burning of the Muslim holy book different from Kristallnacht? It is designed to isolate and intimidate one ethnic or religious group, isn't it? Even though it's not being done by government. Are there no hate laws on the books in the United States? I don't know. I'm just asking. I'm imagining the fear and indignity Muslims will feel across the U.S. when this occurs. I think your country is sinking back into the dark ages to even contemplate carrying out a hateful stunt such as this. And what church has the colossal gall to even call itself a church of God if they can instigate this? It's very troubling. It's just the spark needed to start a racial or religious war that could spread far and wide. Hopefully, it can be isolated and contained to that one very backward area of the country. However, I'm sure the media will do its best to also spread the hate by continually repeating the story. Let's hope not. Roz. Actually, and this is the hell of it, Roz, this is occurring in Gainesville, Florida, which is one of the, it is the most enlightened intellectually and spiritually parts or area of Florida. It's where the University of Florida is. Forget the football team craziness. It's where the University of Florida is. And it's a shame to see this happening in the city of Gainesville. You want to chat? 877-996-2556. All right, from Prairie 2, subject line, work will set you free. Oh, Sales figures for existing homes in July are expected to plunge by 26%. They did plunge. When did you write this? Oh, this morning. And this has driven down equity markets worldwide. Not that anybody that plays the stock market much cares about the middle class dream, but it puts into motion something they can't ignore. Derivatives. Derivatives don't represent anything of value. They're just casino bets that are triggered by a particular number coming up. A big swing in the housing market can start triggering credit default swaps, even without actual defaults. This is the magic of derivatives. This can trigger other derivatives, and that still more, and so on and so on. We don't know what these numbers are, since derivatives are not regulated, and they can be based on anything, and are often interlocking to hedge these bets. But this is the free market, so what could go wrong? Hundreds of billions in TARP money were required last time, plus trillions from the Federal Reserve. The Inspector General for the TARP program estimated that the Fed and Treasury Department took over or guaranteed $24 trillion in toxic so-called assets to keep the Ponzi scheme from collapsing. So, were these abominations done away with? Attempts to include a ban on even some derivatives in the financial reform legislation met with a typical response from Republicans, "Hell no, you can't!" There's still some $600 trillion worth of these contracts piled up like snow above the ski lodge, waiting for a trigger to start the avalanche. It only takes one more snowflake. So what to do with all the unsold houses on the market? Obama's pledge to help people stay in their homes has fallen flat, and foreclosures continue to rise. Banks are even slow-walking the process in some areas to keep from flooding the market with houses they can't sell. The copper market is down with the slump in housing, but that doesn't keep the scavengers from stripping anything of value from entire neighborhoods laid waste by foreclosures. So what to do with all the former homeowners? Republican candidate for New York Governor Carl Paladino said he would transform some state prisons into dormitories for welfare recipients where they could work in state-sponsored jobs, get employment training, and take lessons in personal hygiene. Mr. Paladino is a wealthy Buffalo, New York real estate developer popular with the teabaggers and says he didn't mean the state should jail poor people. The program would be voluntary. How long will it remain voluntary? 7 million people have no other income now but food stamps. That was last year's figure. And the number of people who are falling off unemployment is going to be millions in the next few months if nothing is done. Even if Tier 5 unemployment comp is created, it is really just a Band-Aid if no real economic reform is implemented. Republicans and far too many Democrats can only think of austerity as the solution. And that means putting millions of people on the street. The economic drag that will cause will put still more out of work, and the safety net will be gone for them too. So, what do you do with all those people in the street? Volunteer them to the work camps. Arbeit macht frei. Prairie numeral 2. .com. You may trip on over to his website and read a lot of his stuff there. Okay, I had just one thing. One other thing. Where in the hell did it go? Oh, no. Oh, yeah. I just want to finish this up, then we're going to take your phone calls here. Gulf fishermen are being held responsible for toxic seafood. Like I said, the federal government is not testing for heavy metals. And fishermen are being forced to sign waivers, making them liable for toxins in their catch. Why don't they do that with egg producers? Oh, never mind. Louisiana fishermen's activist Kendra Arneson says dock owners are asking fishermen to sign waivers that put the full responsibility for toxins found in the catch on the fishermen themselves. She said, quote, "This liability cannot fall with our fishermen," end quote. Miss Arneson's claim comes as Louisiana prepares to allow shrimping on the coast to resume Monday coming. A news report from IPS says many shrimpers in the Gulf are simply unwilling to go back in the water due to fears their catch could be contaminated. Mississippi commercial shrimper James Catfish Miller said there's only one place on the state's coast where oysters can be caught, quote, and there is oil and dispersants all over the top of it, end quote. In House hearings this week, federal government officials indicated they have not been testing for heavy metals known to exist in crude oil, some of which can be toxic to humans. During questioning by House Representative Edward Markey, Democrat of Massachusetts, FDA Acting Deputy Director Donald Kramer said his agency isn't monitoring for the presence of heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury in Gulf seafood. He suggested that the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration may be handling that area, but the NOAA senior scientist, Bill Lehr, didn't have an answer for Markey as to whether the NOAA is monitoring for heavy metals and said only, we'll get back to you with an answer on that. Representative Markey said, quote, it's my understanding that compounds like mercury, arsenic, and other heavy metals that are present in crude oil have the ability to accumulate in the tissues of fish in levels that may cause harm, particularly to pregnant women and children, end quote. But the FDA's Kramer told Representative Markey that his agency, the Food and Drug Administration, quote, does not expect to see an increase in heavy toxins from the spill. No problem. That comment befuddled some oil spill observers and scientists. As Washington's blog notes, crude oil contains not only heavy metals, but organic compounds such as benzene and toluene, which are toxic to humans. Oh, it just goes on and on, doesn't it? Well, if it's real dangerous to pregnant women, just think of all those spontaneous abortions that are going to occur.
Oh, no! More embryos! Eek!
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. Oh, by the way, just a quick postscript here. Sheila sends in to me the Obama administration is going to appeal that stem cell ruling. The Obama Justice Department is expected to file an appeal this week. So, Maybe science will prevail. Doesn't happen in this country very, very often, but maybe this time it will. Stephen is in Burbank, California. Hello, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Crab salad with oil and vinegar. Need only add vinegar.
Oh God. Oh God. I don't eat crab. I don't eat things like that. I don't eat crabs or lobsters or shrimp because I know what they eat. and I just can't do it. I know a lot of people. I used to enjoy the hell out of garlic shrimp. Oh my God. I used to love it. But, I had like an anaphylactic kick in the teeth one time after I ate shrimp. Just out of the blue, you know, just all of a sudden. You know, where you
can,
yeah, where you can't breathe. And that was about 25 years ago. So I just leave that stuff alone now. Plus, I carry an EpiPen with me.
Okay.
Anyway, but yes, Kathy, what? Wait, Kathy.
I was just going to say, fish that cooks itself and doesn't stick to the pan.
I said toluene or something. Bob in Miami says it's pronounced toluene, the organic compound toluene. Yes, he writes, I was a chem major. Thanks, Bob. All right, now. All right, I'm sorry, Stephen.
Oh, well, now that we're on the subject, trout and halibut are scavenger fish also. And I love them. But anyway, there's a formula that I think maybe it has nothing to do with arithmetic. We can say psychology plus philosophy equals politics. And in politics, there are concepts and precepts like democracy and fascism and war and peace and all that other good stuff.
Yeah.
And what's happening is it's a psychological war. It's the bewildered herd that spurred me to make the call about Maureen Dowd saying that we have a herd mentality.
Right.
And what it is, it's the bewildered herd. Because we're born and raised, and either Sigmund Freud said it, and or religion also says it, that humankind, human nature basically is evil. And you're going to have to be part of the cohesive society for your own survival. And then they came up with the cult of the individual, and what you've also made mention of, the illusion of central position. So what that does is it separates people in society from thinking only about themselves, and therefore they are bewildered, and they can be more easily manipulated. As you said last night on your show about the mosque, about the prince with Fox News. So that's what's happening to us.
Well,
psychological warfare.
Do you believe that humans start out evil, they're born evil?
Nope, no way. No way on earth, Jocko. It can't be done. Nobody wants to cause damage. Nobody wants to be bad. I mean, babies and infants, you know, they're born premature and they have to be raised up to a certain degree.
So you disagree with Freud and with the religion crazy people?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
No, people are basically good.
Right.
But what we have happening in this herd is some of us over here where the real people are have put forth the effort to realize that we're wearing harnesses. We've realized that we have blinders, and we're trying to move the blinders back a little bit. And the more we dialogue and the more we try and figure out how to break out of this syndrome, there's nothing we can do except try and figure out how to break out of the syndrome.
Well, you know,
move the blinders.
You also are very familiar, I'm sure, with the nature-nurture argument. Which gets down to that question of backdoor kind of way, the basic nature of human beings, is it determined by genetic predisposition through evolution,
exactly,
or is it determined by, you know, who raises you, who teaches you stuff?
Yes, it's on that note where white supremacy comes from, because you look at the Northern European cold, hard, life is tough. You got to get tough or die. The only way to do that is to get on those old boats and go south and rob, pillage, plunder, and all that other good stuff.
On the other hand, if you're familiar at all with Robert Ardrey, his book African Genesis, and Conrad Lawrence on aggression, and some of these other things that it's been a million years since I've read, if I remember, their position was simply that humans were not really tool makers; they were weapons makers. And
yeah,
that's what led. And then there's that famous scene in 2001 where the ape creature picks up an antelope leg bone, and he looks at it, and all of a sudden he realizes what he's got. He's got a weapon, you know, not something to dig a hole, but something to cave in the head of the other group of ape creatures that come over to drink the water from the water hole. So, I don't know. I used to think that Robert Ardrey and was God, but now I realize he's not. Richard Dawkins is, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah, have a dialogue with Richard Dawkins and Tim Wise.
Yeah, right. Hey, thanks.
That would be nice.
Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. Linda writes in, I don't have time. I'll do it when we come back, because the email here from Linda. Subject line is, keep Molly away from those chicken McNuggets. And then she writes an email that I'll share with you. Molly has never been inside the McDonald's. Unless it was with me to get, I used to go there for coffee once in a while. But she's never been inside one. And when she goes by one, if she were religious, she would cross herself.
Flying Monkey Right. It's Mike Malone.
It is 25 before the hour. Linda writes, "Say, Mike, I heard another incident yesterday involving those chicken McNuggets where someone went crazy. Listen, I hate to sound paranoid, but I really do think something funny is going on out here with those delectable little treats. You never hear of someone going ballistic or crazy because Taco Bell is sold out of burritos or Jack in the Box is short on French fries. It always seems to involve McDonald's and those chicken McNuggets. Going nuts and attacking the workers at McDonald's does not seem reasonable to me just because there's a shortage of McNuggets. I think someone needs to take a batch of those over to a lab for chemical analysis. There has to be something addictive in them to cause people to behave that way. Maybe they should rename them Chicken McMeth." Linda. Chicken McCrystal. Yeah, apparently somebody went wacko in a McDonald's because the order was for chicken McNuggets.
Well, I'm sorry, we don't have any of those right now.
Kaboom. Mark is in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Pretty good. You know, when you came to San Francisco, you had two guys that had your back in this back there in the seating area.
That's right.
And they had me, and you had a guy named Bruce who was a Vietnam veteran, and I do kickboxing 5 days a week.
Oh, you were one of the guards?
No, I was just one of the, you know, I was in the stands just enjoying the show, but if there was anything that came down, I would have been there with you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Yeah, those guys were heavily armed. Well, you know, heavily armed, but it was because some half-wit threatened me, and I just get sick of threats. I really do. So I just figured, okay, if you want ass, you got to bring ass, and if you bring ass to me while I'm in San Francisco, you are going to be pulverized.
Well, you were going to get some help, so don't, you know, I just wanted to let you know that.
Thank you, Mark. Anyway, I appreciate that.
Yeah, not a problem. What I want to bring up is two things on where we're at here economically. One is we have to just denounce Reaganomics and just say it didn't work, it hasn't worked, it's destroyed us, and we don't want any more of it. We don't want to hear from the Republicans anything about tax cuts for the rich. We need a new deal, Mike. We need a new deal. The Democrats have to come out with a new deal because jobs is the only way we're going to get our economy back.
What do you think the Democrats can do?
Well, I think that what they could do is build the infrastructure of this country up. It's fallen apart, and that's one way of putting people to work. Another one is, going to green energy.
Yeah.
Building plants that will produce all kinds of green energy. I mean, that's the wave of the future, and there's plenty of work that we can pursue in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and I think that's what the Democrats have to do is they have to put out a jobs plan and use what worked. FDR worked.
Right.
That's what they have to go back to. We know Reagan doesn't work. We know FDR does. And that's what this election has to be about, that we want to do away with Reaganomics, put it away for good. It didn't work. It never did work. And go to a new deal.
Do you think corporate America has enough of a death grip on this country, though, at this point, where any attempt to do what you're suggesting, and I agree, that's what I've been talking about in this program, I don't know, for what, a year and a half now, a jobs program, infrastructure, we desperately need it. But the question behind that is, do we, the people, through our representatives in Congress, both the House and the Senate, have the power to bring this about? Because it's up to us. I question that. I really do, because I think most members, and I mean most, majority of both the House and the Senate, are owned by corporate America. It may be as much as 4/5 or 7/8 of the House and the Senate owned by corporate America. So I agree with you. How did the Democrats, though, get that going? Remember, Mark, that the Democrats are cowards. The Democrats in office are cowards. Every time...
Well, let me say this, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me put it this way, and I agree with you. Either they stand up and denounce the Republicans, or what I see here is inevitable, a revolution, because we're not going to be We're not going to have our souls sold to corporate America. Sooner or later, people are going to catch on to it. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I guarantee you this. If they don't stand up to these Republicans and end this economic injustice, the only thing left that I see is there will be a revolution. I don't see anything, any other way out of it.
Well, I don't either. You know, historically, and we've talked about this on the program before also, historically, revolution usually, if not almost exclusively, arises out of the middle class. The idea of destroying the middle class, which is the function of Reaganomics, would seem to preclude the possibility of people ever revolting and finding a leader who, whether it's a Castro or a Lenin or, you know, a Dr. Martin Luther King, it doesn't make any difference who it is. So if there's no middle class that produces that, you know, poor people usually don't produce a revolutionary leader. It usually, and rich people damn sure don't. Why would they want to? So it comes from the middle class. I don't know if we are broken in spirit enough in this country yet, which is the goal of these bastards, to organize around a leader who would say enough of this crap. I nominate.
If Republicans got their way, Mike, there'd be no Social Security.
Right.
No unemployment. There'd be no social
Nothing.
Programs at all. What would happen if this country was faced with that?
Well, I nominate you.
Well, thanks, Mike.
And
I'm going to need some help.
You and there's a couple other people. I have a friend who's a Hopi Indian who lives out in the desert someplace, and I have another friend who is Kate in the desert. Between the three of you, you could probably get us straight. Oh, and let's not forget Bob Alexander. All right, Mark, thanks, man. You make good points. I hear you loud and clear, okay?
Okay, brother.
All right, sir. Take care. Yeah, you know, Mark knows. You know. I know. Just damn near anybody knows. You know, we've been talking about this for how long now? I was talking about it. A lot of people, so-called liberals or progressives or whatever you want to call them, not the right wing, whatever we are. I don't know. Talking about this even back in the Bush years. How much of real constitution-protected rights could be destroyed under Bush Cheney before the people would revolt? Well, obviously, the answer to that was all of them. Nobody did anything. Nobody did anything. We tortured, we brutalized, we murdered, we killed, we hired private contractors, we burned, raped, looted, pillaged, stole. I mean, the whole country went to hell in our foreign policy. And as a result of that, or maybe not as a result, but part of that, it went to hell domestically, too. The rich people got everything. The ultra-rich. Hell, I know rich people. I'm talking about the ultra-rich, the top one half of 1%, the top 2%. No. Top one half of 1%, if that. They got what they wanted. They got everything they wanted. They didn't have to compromise anything. They got it all. All of it. So I hear what Mark's saying. But if we didn't do it in the 8 years of Bush-Cheney, what, I mean, are we going to do it now? Are we going to do it when? How many people have to lose their homes, their jobs, their futures? And I mean literal futures. Every day I walk up to the top of the driveway here and I get the New York Times. And it used to be the first thing I would do is go to the op-ed page. Now I go to the business section and read these horror stories. And sometimes they're in the A section. But the horror stories of what is going on in the country. The rich continue to, this predatory class that takes everything away from everybody continues to function as if nothing is happening. And people by the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions are losing everything. You know, Mark's question is right on. How much, or rather he said at some point, we're going to hit that tipping point. That's how I used to put it, tipping point. But I got to the point where I figured, Jesus, God, if we haven't hit the tipping point during Bush Cheney, then maybe there isn't a tipping point. All the problems, you know, I don't like Obama's cowardice, and that's all it is. But he didn't create this. These are not his problems. None of them. Now, he's perpetuated a lot of them. His policies on domestic surveillance and Abu, not Abu Ghraib, but Guantanamo and some of these other policies, Afghanistan. He's perpetuated them, but he didn't start this. He didn't start the fire. So, who are we going to rebel against? Obama? This is what the bastards, the wealthy billionaire bastards in media want the American people to do, to rebel against Obama. Obama hasn't done anything. He's perpetuated some stuff. But if we really want to hang him from the lamppost or get the tumbrils turning and bring out the guillotine, then we head for the financial centers. We don't head for the political centers. The political centers are chock-a-block with cowards. We head for the financial centers, right? Oh, my goodness. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Anyway, great show, as always. Great callers, great email. Steve was great. Linda, and what really cracked me up, I was taking a sip of a libation when you started doing that embryo thing
yeah.
you did.
Yeah.
And you made me choke up through my nose. That's not good when.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I hate that. Then your nose.
But anyway.
Then your nose burns.
Anyway, last time I masturbated, I went to the toilet and I heard, "Help me! I'm drowning! I'm drowning!"
How much have you had to drink tonight?
Oh, about 2 liters.
About 2 beers, officer. That's all I've had. Well, Tom, I'll tell you what. Let me. I don't know. Your phone call just conjured up an image that's just a little bit too strong for me to take tonight. Listen, thanks. Chris is in Nashville, listening on Sirius. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how you doing? You got me?
Yeah, I got you.
All right. I asked the question what the Democrats could do to get jobs back, and it's just the very thing that they don't want to do, and that's get out of NAFTA, get out of the World Trade Organization, and make it profitable for businesses to manufacture goods here. I think that's what the deal is.
Well, you're absolutely right, and corporate America, I don't think ever is going to leave these companies or these countries where they found out they can exploit labor and get it for a 10th, a 20th, or a 50th of what it costs here. But that's how capitalism works. We've talked about this before, Chris. I'm sure you've heard it, and I'm sure you probably know it. The one irritating expense that capitalists have to deal with is the cost of labor. They hate that. Even though labor is usually provided by other human beings, but they hate it because, you know, then the bastards want to form unions and then they want paid vacations. And next thing you know, they want health care and they want a 40-hour work week and they don't want their kids to work in the mines and just all that, you know, all that garbage. And that just really irritates the hell out of a capitalist. Look, buddy, you're supposed to shut up and take what I give you. I'm the man. You're the punk. This is the way it works. So. How do you entice all these corporate predators to bring their corporations back to the United States. Well, the first thing you do, if I were king of America for a couple of months, I would slap confiscatory taxes on all these sons of bitches. They have escaped paying taxes for the past 40 years. King Malloy would put a stop to that real quick, and that would drive a lot of them out of business, which would cause a lot of so-called third world workers to not be able to collect their 50 cents an hour. And I guess I would send over a message that says, sorry, third world workers, you're going to have to come up with your own factory stuff. I've got a bunch of capitalists here I have to behead. So after that, then, after the confiscatory taxes, I'd take everything they owned. Then I'd probably line some of them up against the wall and literally execute them. I'm serious about this. I probably would do that because the crimes they have committed is beyond human ability to comprehend. The wars they have started, the death that they have salted the earth with their predatory practices, very few of these sons of bitches should be allowed to continue to suck in air. Aside from the fact that they have committed what do you want to call it? Ecocide. They have killed the planet. They're in the process of murdering the planet. So I'm a very angry so-called progressive talk show host. I'm not progressive. I am, I don't know what I am. I don't care. You don't care. Nobody cares. I'm just tired of this. I am so fed up with it. So after doing that, after lopping off some heads or putting some people up against the wall, and after they have their last cigarette, take away their corporations, their capitalistic enterprises, and destroying Wall Street. Wall Street doesn't do anything. The investment class in this country, they play games with each other. They don't do anything for working class America. So, you know, it's a long agenda. And as far as I'm concerned, it has to begin with some sort of really, really radical action, if you know what I mean, Sparky. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, right? Huh? Right. Okay. Yeah. Get out the guillotine. Let's storm the Bastille. Only, I'm not kidding. At all. Or the other way is to present ourselves to corporate America and beg, please, Mr. Capitalist, could you bring the jobs back? Please, Mr. Capitalist, can you make sure in the games you play with your fellow capitalists that I don't lose my house again, or my kid doesn't die of some kind of hideous disease because I can't afford health insurance, and even if I can, your representatives tell me I can't have it after I've paid for it. Please, sirs, because they're all sirs, please, white people, can I, because they're 99.9% white, please, can I just have my life back? So, I don't know what to do. I know what the answer would be to the please. It would be go pound sand up your, one of your body orifices, buddy. Get out of my face. You know, I've got to go make my $50 million today. Go away, scum. So what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying? What are you going to do? Oh, God. All right, stick around. Another hour to go before we sleep. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. As promised, some other stuff that is stacking up here. And if I don't get it, if I don't get it sad, I don't, you know, probably won't get sad. I guess you know by now, approximately 500,000 pounds of deli meat products that may be contaminated with Listeria monocytogenes. Is that how you say that? I think so. Have been recalled by something called Zemco Industries in Buffalo, New York. Zemco Industries. They make deli meat products? Zemco. Sounds like something that makes bombs or dynamite. Zemco. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety and Inspection Service announced late yesterday this is going to thin the herd a little bit. The sandwich meats were sold at Walmart stores nationwide. Oh, my God. There are so far no reported illnesses associated with the recall. And then it lists here the products subject to recall. Listen to this. 25.5-pound cases of market-side grab-and-go sandwiches, Black Forest ham with natural juices coated with caramel color. Ah! 28.49-pound cases of market-side grab-and-go sandwiches, hot ham, hard salami, pepperoni, sandwich peppers. 25.5-pound cases of market-side grab-and-go sandwiches, Angus roast beef coated with caramel color. The meat products were produced on various dates from June 18th to July 2nd this year and have various use-by dates. Oh, by the way, if you don't know this, Listeria infection can cause fever and chills, headache, upset stomach, and vomiting. It is most likely to affect pregnant women, the elderly, and people with weakened immune systems. So I guess Zemco Industries is the company that puts together market-side grab-and-go sandwiches. Oh, my God. Zemco. Remember we used to walk into a deli and they would just make you a sandwich? I guess you can still do that in some places, but... damn sure not at Walmart, huh? Well, I guess you can at Walmart, too. By the way, if you have been wondering about the connection between global climate change and all of these disasters that seem to be occurring every time we turn around, floods, especially floods, hurricanes, yada, yada, yada. Well, you can relax. A study has found that no such link exists. They call it front page thought. I never heard of that. The pull of front page thought. You know, you see a headline. Ah, there's the answer. Front page thought. The pull of that and the eagerness of climate campaigners to jog the public. Andrew Revkin writes, I believe this is from the Times, have sometimes created a tendency to tie mounting losses from weather-related disasters to human-driven global warming. Huh? But finding a statistically robust link between such disasters and the building human climate influence remains a daunting task. So anyway, a new analysis of nearly 24 papers looking at trends in disaster losses finds no convincing link between the losses and climate change. The author concludes, the author of this analysis concludes that so far, the rise in disaster losses is mainly a function of more investments getting in harm's way as communities in places vulnerable to natural hazards grow. Oh, really? So the flooding in Afghanistan, communities and places vulnerable to natural hazards grow. I didn't know there was a surge in condos over in Pakistan or waterfront property. But apparently, according to this paper, the paper is titled, "Have Disaster Losses Increased Due to Anthropogenic Climate Change?" How's that? It's in the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society, if you want to take a look. It was written by somebody in Amsterdam, and it focused on climate and water resources. I got to give you the summary. It's just a very short paragraph. Here's what it says. The increasing impact of natural disasters over recent decades has been well documented, especially the direct economic losses and losses that were insured. Claims are made by some that climate change has caused more losses, but others assert that increasing exposure due to population and economic growth has been a much more important driver. Ambiguity exists today as the causal link between climate change and disaster losses has not been addressed in a systematic manner by major scientific assessments. Here, the author says, I present a review and analysis of recent quantitative studies on past increases in weather disaster losses and the role of anthropogenic climate change. Analyses show that although economic losses from weather-related hazards have increased, anthropogenic climate change so far did not have a significant impact on losses from natural disaster. Whew. Don't you love that? The bottom line here, regardless of what happens due to global warming on a crowded, urbanizing planet, increased exposure to and losses from nature's hard knocks are a sure thing. Yeah, you know, people keep getting in harm's way. Well, that's good to know. This morning I was looking through my copy of the New York Times while I avoided eating any kind of scrambled egg. And I've got something on that, too, here in our little odds and ends section. Anyway, looking through the New York Times, went to the editorial page, op-ed page, letters to the editor page. And something very interesting. There were several letters. I just want to quote a couple. This is from Constance Nathanson in Gardner, New York, who writes, I'm appalled by the religious and ethnic bigotry, and worse, the political pandering to bigotry, currently on display in my country. This is not the country I was born in and grew up in. This is not the country I believe in. This is not the America that has long stood as a beacon to the world for its protection of spiritual and religious freedom. The truly courageous politician in this sorry affair has been New York City's Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and I applaud him. Now, what the letter is referring to, and the other one I'm going to read to you, is an article. A couple of columns about the mosque, the imam, and the politics, all this craziness that's going on in lower Manhattan regarding the mosque and the hallowed ground and so on and so forth. There's a couple more in here that I want to share with you, though. And one of them is written by a letter to the editor written by Bernard Goldberg. Remember him? Old Bernie Goldberg? Ah! Of course you do. You remember Bernie Goldberg. But it's very interesting the way the New York Times identifies him. And I'll share that with you when we come back. All right, stick around. We have we don't have miles to go before we sleep, but we do have a little bit left here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
He's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So, these letters to the editor that were in this morning's New York Times I found very interesting. Here's another one. This is from Rex Shahriari. There you go, in Newton, Iowa. To the editor, instead of being so divisive, the Ground Zero Mosque controversy could be a golden opportunity for taking a step toward reducing interfaith tensions. What if Muslims, Jews, Catholics, and Protestants in New York City got together and constructed an ecumenical house of worship and community center on the site? Worship services could take place on the Sabbath for the respective faiths, and community service could be provided by all faiths. Substituting cooperation for hatred might bring people together and serve as a model. I am not quite sure why this controversy exists in the real world at all. I understand why it exists in Fox world. I understand why it exists in right-wing crazy people world. But why it exists at all is madness. I mean, this is the part that is totally insane. Like Maureen Dowd had in her column on Sunday, quoting, was it Charles McKay, an historian, that, you know, people usually go insane. People react with a herd-like instinct, and people usually go insane the same way, as a herd, together. And then they recover individually, something to that effect. But the whole mosque story is nonsense. It's just pure craziness. There was a bombing in Lower Manhattan 9 years ago. A lot of people died. Why is the area where this tragedy, and it was a tragedy thanks to Bush and Cheney, where this tragedy occurred, why is it now the focal point of religious insanity? This is crazy. Now, the last one. The last one. This is from Bernie Goldberg. To the editor, there's no shortage of kind words in your front page profile of the Imam Faisal Abdu Rauf. The article tells us that, quote, he consistently denounces violence, end quote, that he, quote, devotes himself to befriending Christians and Jews, end quote, that he is a, quote, supporter of the State of Israel, end quote, that after 9/11 he was, quote, all over the airwaves denouncing terrorism, end quote, and that he even shares the cooking and shopping with his wife. What a guy! But what's missing is what the imam told Ed Bradley on 60 Minutes just 19 days after the 9/11 attacks. Quote, I wouldn't say that the United States deserved what happened, but the United States policies were an accessory to the crime that happened. End quote. That comment, Bernie Goldberg writes, probably more than anything else, has focused the attention of many critics of the proposed cultural center and mosque and should not have been left out. Well, in the first place, the statement is absolutely, factually a bullseye. When the imam says, I wouldn't say the United States deserved what happened, okay, but the United States policies were an accessory to the crime that did happen. Right. Absolutely. But Bernie Goldberg? Oh, no, no, no. If you can cut through the sarcasm and the pandering and the patronizing tone and language used in his email, you get down to something I found interesting. It's signed Bernard Goldberg, Miami, August 22nd, 2010. And then the Times identifies him. The writer is the author and former CBS News correspondent. Former CBS News correspondent. Well, yeah, but why not put what he does currently after his name? Currently, he is a commentator at Fox News. Disingenuous on the part of the New York Times? Eh? The writer is the author and former CBS News correspondent. Why not, New York Times, say the writer is the author and current commentator on Fox News? Why not say that? I don't know. Maybe the letters to the editor for the New York Times decided to hide Bernie Goldberg's current status as a commentator at Fox News for some reason? You suppose? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Mikey Weinstein, the head of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, who we really have been mentioning a lot on this program here lately. It's been some time, several months, since we had him on as a guest. But this whole mosque issue, the Christian fundamentalist crazy people in the U.S. military who are constantly threatening our soldiers with all sorts of disciplinary action if they don't profess their great and undying love of the fundamentalist Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, yada, 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 on and on. That has brought Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation into the news lately. He was interviewed here a couple of days ago by Michael Leon and for what website? Damn, I don't have it down. But during this interview, as Michael Leon reports, Weinstein is, like you, if you're sane, like me, appalled at the bigotry and cowardice of those who would deny Muslims their human rights to open a community center in a mosque in New York City. Weinstein said, quote, "This is shameful, scandalous, outrageous, an effort that is un-American and idiotic. Here's the reasoning. Muslims go to mosques. The 9/11 killers were Muslim, so all Islam is evil, and mosques are evil. They do not differentiate." End quote. And then Mikey Weinstein added to the interviewer, Michael Leon. Weinstein said, "Look, Mike, our foundation is not political. This should not be a political issue. This is a human rights issue. We have 180 clients who are Muslims serving in the American military, and it's the same scandalous affair there as well. At least these people in New York objecting to this human right do not have command and control authority over nuclear weapons and laser-guided missiles like our military, but this is the same mentality we fight against. Our military is incredibly Islamophobic, and unfortunately, so are some people who call themselves American." He went on to say, "This is an incredible outrage. Our Allied commander in World War II was a German. His last name was Eisenhower. I looked it up. But no one ever came up to him and said, "You can't lead because you're German." The anti-mosque mentality is horrible, but it's nothing new. Ah, Lord. And as the interview, Michael Leon points out, Weinstein is a 1977 honor graduate of the United States Air Force Academy, which is still a center of discrimination against non-Christians. And Weinstein added, quote, "It's a disgrace. Any American thinks there should not be a mosque there in New York. It is a disgrace that Americans would think this in opposition to the Constitution, but this reflects much of the American military's view. The culture is there. There's nothing worse we could be doing. To act as an accelerant and lubricant to transforming young Islamic men and women around the world into insurrectionists and jihadists than to say to Muslims, you are not entitled to freedom. This is the work of fundamentalist Christians and ultra-extreme right-wing Jews." End quote. So, again, the voices that are raised against this craziness are people who understand the basic premise in this country. Not the original basic premise, but the basic premise that has evolved over 200-plus years of this tired, failing democracy's existence, right? Weinstein happens to be one of those people. Joe Scarborough on MSNBC's Morning Joe also had his, apparently, I don't know, something thumped him on the back of the head, too, about all this. He feels that Republicans are going to be embarrassed by the way they've opposed this mosque. And it's, by the way, it's not a mosque per se. It is referred to as Cordoba House or Park 51. That's Plan Your Ground Zero. But anyway, yesterday, MSNBC's Joe Scarborough told Republicans that they should, quote, speak out against Newt Gingrich and the voices of hate, end quote. Oh, my goodness. Newtie, a voice of hate. No kidding. And while he was at it, Scarborough threatened to leave the Republican Party for a party, quote, that actually believes in small government, end quote. Come on, Joe. You don't believe in small government. What, are you kidding me? I mean, I can agree with Joe about the hate that comes boiling out of Newt Gingrich's mouth and some of these other right-wingers, but Joe doesn't believe in small government. Come on. What this is all about, last week, Gingrich compared supporters of the mosque to Nazis, appearing on, oh, here's a surprise, Fox and Friends. Gingrich said, quote, "Nazis don't have the right to put up a sign next to the Holocaust Museum in Washington." Ooh. And prior to that, Gingrich argued that the mosque shouldn't be built near Ground Zero until churches and synagogues are allowed in Saudi Arabia. Oh, my God. So Scarborough said yesterday, quote, "That is demagoguery of the first order. And people in the Republican Party need to separate themselves from these voices." He went on to say, "And I talk to you, my Republican brethren. I don't know how much longer you'll be my brethren. I'll be honest. I'm looking for a conservative party that actually believes in small government and not engaging in Wilsonian wars. But that's another discussion." He went on to say, "I'm just talking, you know, as a friend. I promise you this. You're going to be embarrassed. You're going to look back 2, 3, 4 years from now, and this is going to be a dark blot on your record if you don't speak out against Newt Gingrich and the voices of hate. This is an embarrassment, and you need to speak out against it." End quote. Woo! All right, you go, Joe Scarborough. He believes in small government. Oh, in a pig's butt, he believes in small government. He believes in small government, maybe where it concerns social safety net programs, but not where it concerns anything else. But he did sound like he's getting a little anti-war there, didn't he? Huh? Come on, Joe, you're a big celebrant as well as a proponent of American empire, aren't you? Or have you changed your way too? Also, I wanted to get to this yesterday and earlier tonight, but this stuff has a way of building up. Cat Mary in Memphis sent me a couple of emails here. She, in the first one, she says, you're letting the Food and Drug Administration off way too lightly. And she's referring to Monday night when I talked about how the FDA's commissioner, whatever the hell her name is, Hamburg, when she talks about, when you listen to her, you get the impression, or I got the impression, that she really wants to make things right, but making things right, I don't know if she has enough time left in whatever length of time the Obama administration has left to fix all this stuff. But as Kat Mary writes, the FDA lets food manufacturers dump over 15 million pounds of synthetic dyes into foods and beverages every year. The Center for Science and the Public Interest and others report that these dyes cause cancer, allergic reactions, and hyperactivity. And here they are. It's blue number one, blue number two, citrus red two, green three, orange B, red three, red 40, yellow five, and yellow six. They all go into M&Ms, Fruit Loops, Kraft salad dressing, Betty Crocker's fruit roll-ups, Manischewitz matzo balls, Skittles, ConAgra's, and many other products. Hello, cancer, allergic reactions, and hyperactivity. In 1985, Kat Mary writes, the FDA's acting commissioner, an honest one at that time, said that red number three induces cancer, but today it's still legal to use it. Back in 1996, the Delaney Clause that prohibited putting known carcinogens was repealed. That was during the Gingrich Revolution in Congress. It needs to be reinstated. Contrary to what Hamburg whines, Kat Mary says, the FDA doesn't need any more power. It abuses what it already has. The corrupt FDA gets over two-thirds of its funding from the industries it's supposed to regulate. A clear conflict of interest. Signed, Kat Mary, irate in Memphis. Yeah, Kat Mary, I hear you. She also sent me another one. And I think we'll have enough time to get to this. I wanted to get to it earlier tonight, but this other stuff came up about the elections and so on and so forth. So I'll try to do this when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sent an email to Kellogg's, the cereal manufacturer. Notice I said manufacturer. See, Kat Mary? regarding, you know, all this talk about the egg recall, which is making a lot of people sick, the eggs themselves. But she writes, eggs, how about that breakfast cereal? And then she sends this to Christina Caleros, consumer specialist, consumer affairs, Kellogg's. And she writes, why do you, on behalf of Kellogg's, say that biotech ingredients are safe? Independent scientific studies prove that Monsanto's genetically modified organisms, GMOs, cause the following in mammals. Production of new proteins that the body has no experience in handling. low sperm count, in utero death, aborted fetuses, birth defects, tendency to infertility in following generations, obesity, diabetes, malnutrition, brain damage, liver, kidney, lung, and pancreas dysfunction, gastrointestinal disorders, permanent DNA damage, degraded immune function, autoimmune disorders, destruction of CD4 cells, often diagnosed as HIV/AIDS, lupus, cancer of the liver and pancreas, hair growth inside the mouth, bizarre but true, and bankruptcy-related suicide. Over 30,000 such suicides in India directly due to Monsanto's lying and withholding information about its GMO cotton. Disease-causing GMO foods, quote-quote, Cat Mary writes, were declared, quote, substantially equivalent, end quote, to safe organic food only because a former Monsanto employee, Michael Taylor, who now sits on the FDA. It was a political corporate profit decision, not a scientific one. The FDA, let us remember, gets over two-thirds of its funding from merged biotech pharma corporations like Monsanto Pharmacia. Taylor also engineered the FDA's no-labeling policy so that citizens are unknowingly duped into buying disease-causing GMO products instead of safe, real food. You say that, quote, even organic ingredients can contain biotech ingredients due to cross-pollination, end quote. That fact, Cat Mary writes, reveals ecocide. Monsanto's disease-causing GMO canola, for example, has escaped into the wild in the UK, Canada, Japan, and the US. Thus, it can contaminate safe and healthful organic crops worldwide. All genetically modified organisms in food are a death threat to public health and the world's food supply. Until Kellogg's commits to using non-GMO ingredients, I will not buy from Kellogg's or from the subsidiaries Bare Naked, Morningstar Farms, or Kashi. Moreover, I will inform other Americans in grocery stores about the disease-causing GMOs in Kellogg's products. Monsanto is committing terrorism and crimes against humanity by selling its disease-causing GMO products to millions of unknowing people. If you doubt that, look again at the list of diseases that GMOs cause and look into Monsanto's history. Bluntly put, those who poison our food are murderers. I strongly urge you to take the ethical, rational, patriotic, moral, and public action of vowing to use only non-GMO ingredients and then to live up to that promise. Ta-da! Cat Mary is absolutely, positively correct. Genetically modified organisms. How did that happen? Boy, we could do lengthy programming on that, couldn't we? And then after a while, people's eyes would glaze over because most folks would say, well, come on, Mike Fay, and Jesus, there's more important things to talk about. Genetically modified food. What about all the countries that benefit from it? What about the countries where people have a hell of a time scratching out any kind of existence? So we send them genetically modified organisms, and they plant these GMOs, and all of a sudden they get corn. And it's wonderful. Of course, they get corn that might have a frog gene in it for some reason, which means maybe the corn will hop. But is there anything wrong with hopping corn? Not unless it starts to go ribbit or gets into your system and does the damage that Cat Mary is writing about here. Of course, I'm sure you, Truth Seeker, you understand the risks that we all take. I mean, the simplest test of all that, I mentioned tomatoes. Was it last week or yesterday? I mentioned the homegrown tomatoes, not the ones with all the genes in them that don't belong there. And if you go to the grocery store, any chain grocery store, and buy one of those perfect, round, red tomatoes. They look so beautiful, don't they? They look just like the ones Grandma used to grow in her garden. Buy one of those, take it home. Go to the local growers co-op where people grow real tomatoes. Buy one of those. Take it home. Put both of them on the table. Cut into them. Take a bite. Oh, my God. You'll notice a difference right away, won't you? Hey, I'll see you tomorrow, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.